ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
A confession. A memory. A lie. What if all three could be wrong? Forensic is a new series from All in the Mind, unpacking the hidden psychology of crime solving. Why innocent people confess? How memories can be rewritten? The science behind true crime. All in the Mind, Forensic. Search for All in the Mind on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, Hilary Harper stepping into Rewind today to bring you the story of an Australian dog that changed history, though this dog is one you've probably never heard of. The origins of the kangaroo dog, or roo dog, begin at Sydney Cove in 1788, and the canine is uncannily linked to Australia's colonial history. Today, producer Jane Curtis tells the story of the kangaroo dog. And just a brief warning for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people listening, this program has the voices of people who've died and descriptions of colonial violence.
Hi, I'm Jane Curtis, and I bet you're thinking, what is a kangaroo dog?
They sleep all the time.
16 hours a day.
They just sleep.
Very lean on politeness. Not the kind of dog that you sit there and go, oh, you would. You don't do that with a kangaroo dog. And
they're sooks as well.
They are sooks. But 16 hours a day, they are sleepers. And then the bit where they are active is just, like, amazing. When they were coming past me, it was like, boom, boom, boom. They're really full on, yeah. Name's Julie Dowling. I'm a fine artist portrait painter and I do history paintings as well.
Yep, I'm Dr. Carol Dowling, an academic in Aboriginal studies. And this is Carol speaking because we are twins, we're identical twins.
Carol and Julie Dowling are First Nations women of Budimir country in Midwest Western Australia. Budimir country is semi-desert. And in spring, it's a carpet of West Australian wildflowers. Before I'd met Carol and Julie, I'd never heard of this sooky, sleepy, super-fast dog. And maybe you haven't either. We'll get to why that is and how the kangaroo dog got its name. But to picture the dog in your head, imagine a beefed-up greyhound. A big, athletic dog. These days, the kangaroo dog is pretty rare. Some people claim they've even died out. But have they?
Oh, hello, mate. Elsa! Good girl.
Maybe not. There was one place I found a lot of these dogs, 37,000 of them, references that is, in Trove, the online archive of old Australian newspapers and books. As a dog lover, I was hooked. And as a history lover, it mattered. Because history can be really people-centric. It's all about us. The more I dug, the more I found the kangaroo dog at key moments in our colonial history. In fact, the kangaroo dog was part of the colonisation process. But it also played a role in the resistance to colonisation as well. And sometimes it was just on the sofa, asleep. Let's meet our first kangaroo dog and hear more from twin sisters Julie and Carol Dowling. We're in Perth, tucked inside Julie's art studio, an old mining shed that sits in her backyard.
We were brought up with a story about particular dogs in our family that had sort of like a legendary status.
Yes.
Julie's painted one particular one called Tiger Moth, and he was sort of like a dappled colour, wasn't he?
Yeah.
A brindle colour. And Tiger Moth was one hell of a roo dog. Our auntie Liz, when she was growing up there with Granny, that dog helped her learn to walk.
I'm Liz Dowling, or Auntie Liz. I was only a baby at the time. And there was this big dog. Its fur was like a tiger's fur. And I knew that by holding onto its neck, I could get around. That dog was a real solid dog. A friendly dog. Big dog.
Tiger Moth died before Carol and Julie were born, but they were brought up with the stories of kangaroo dogs.
You know, it's almost like that dog was a part of our life. Those oral histories are very powerful about that. We have a long line of storytellers, and our mum brought us up talking about her grandmother and the life that they lived up in a small town called Karoo.
Karoo is on Neward Country, a tiny town on the train line, about 3 hours north of Perth.
She was known as Granny, so that's our great-grandmother, but she used to do quite regular hunting with the kangaroo dogs. Granny was forever making kangaroo skin pelts and making, like, blankets out of the kangaroo and them having kangaroo meat all the time.
Yep, kangaroo dogs got their name because they chase and kill kangaroos.
Forever when you're yarning to Noongars or Yamajis or whatever, the first thing they say to each other is, you got any meat? To actually have a good source of protein is the most important thing. It's always about meat.
Kangaroo is one of the healthiest meats there is, and kangaroos have been hopping all over Australia for at least 2 million years. They've been sustainably managed and hunted by First Nations peoples with weapons, nets, dingoes and fire. Here's Carol Dowling.
In my country, in Buddy My Country, the use of fire was very important to seasonally burn off the bush and force kangaroos down to a certain exit point. It took a long time to build up a good population of kangaroos. They often wouldn't touch the older males or the breeding females. A lot of the techniques for hunting were quite inspired by a real close understanding of country.
So what happens when the kangaroo is hunted by people and dogs with no knowledge of or connection to country? To find out, let's leave Budimir country in the west and go to the east coast, to Gadigal country, and the birth of the first kangaroo dog. It's 1788. The lives of First Nations people are about to change forever. Over 1,000 British soldiers and convicts are setting up camp at Warung, Sydney Cove. They unload animals off the ships of the First Fleet, cows, horses, sheep and dogs, including greyhounds, a traditional British hunting dog brought to Australia on the orders of Governor Phillip.
Governor Phillip was told that he would need greyhounds if he wanted to catch the kangaroos. That's why they were brought.
That's dog historian Guy Hull. He grew up hearing the stories of his dad's kangaroo dogs. In the first few years of the colony at Sydney Cove, the crops failed, and so the British hunt kangaroos. They hunt them with muskets that rarely hit their targets, and with the governor's greyhounds.
They tried to ambush kangaroos and hunt kangaroos, but kangaroos are very wary, and they've been hunted for 60,000 years by people, so they know that people are trouble and they know that dogs are trouble.
Turns out that these greyhounds, bred to kill rabbits and foxes, just weren't cut out for the job of tackling and killing a kangaroo.
What can a kangaroo do? Oh, what can a kangaroo do?
Kangaroos are really dangerous. They can grab a dog, they can fight them savagely. They can use their enormous nails to disembowel them. They can get into water. They can grab dogs, they can stand on them and drown them. And they've had thousands of years practice doing this with dingoes. The colonists soon realised that they needed a harder dog. So they got hold of Scottish deerhounds and cross those with greyhounds, which is the animal that we knew then as the kangaroo dog.
So sometime in the first 15 years of the Sydney colony, the first kangaroo dog puppy was born. We'll call her Speedy, after a real kangaroo dog of the time. Speedy, the furry, muscly deerhound-greyhound cross, looked quite distinctive.
Rudolph, the wet-nosed crossbreed, ugliest dog I've seen.
Look, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but I know people who are very close to me have seen pictures and thought, that's the ugliest dog I've ever seen in my life. They weren't bred to be pretty, they were bred to do a job, and they're about as pretty as a rifle.
Covered in fleas and mange. And all of the town dogs picked on Rudolph, cause he couldn't fight.
Lost. Luckily for kangaroo dog Speedy, looks didn't count.
For a while, they became the most valuable commodity in the colony because that's what kept everyone in their protein. So they were a pretty important dog.
Thanks to the skills of Speedy and other kangaroo dogs, kangaroo meat was a regular colonial dish, cooked in soup, stews, or the famous kangaroo steamer.
Cut the meat off the hindquarters, being careful to remove all the sinews. Chop it very fine. Take the same quantity of smoked bacon fat.
With kangaroo meat on the menu, British colonists bought and sold hundreds of dogs.
Sydney Gazette, November 3rd, 1805. Wanted to purchase for a gentleman at a distant settlement. A good kangaroo dog that must be warranted to kill and show. A liberal price will be given.
As the colonists expanded from Sydney Cove onto Darug country, they violently pushed through Aboriginal resistance. Yet, kangaroo hunting was one thing the newcomers and First Nations peoples sometimes did together. Darug warriors carrying woomeras, spears and axes hunted alongside white bushmen with their, quote, savage, muscular dogs. Soon, Darug people had kangaroo dogs of their own. At Shaw's Creek Aboriginal place at Yarramundi on Darug country, there's a large rock engraving of a kangaroo hunt with an engraving of a dog, described by some historians as a kangaroo dog.
So they'd learnt in that 15 years in Sydney the significance of the hunting dogs in the Australian environment. It's a kangaroo dog, you know, the local breed. And that's what was brought to Tasmania in 1803.
James Boyce is a historian based in Hobart, and his interests are pretty wide. In his books, he's taken on the Pokies, Original Sin, and the history of Van Diemen's Land, Tasmania. In 1803, the British anchored their boats in the Derwent River in modern-day Hobart. A puppy named Bosun and other kangaroo dogs scramble off the boat. The kangaroo dog has arrived in Tasmania.
Well, it would have been like paradise. Can you imagine? All the waterways, that amazing Kunanyu Mountain, and the sounds, they say, the sounds of the whales. You're hearing the whales all the time in the Derwent, making whale song. Imagine that. It was magical and would have been just all stories, so many stories of everything having meaning. And then these tall ships arrive. My name is Julie Goff. I'm an artist and also writer, researcher and curator at the Tasmania Museum and Art Gallery. I'm also a Trawawe woman.
These Palawa-managed lands were, to the English, you know, consistently described like a gentleman's park. There's 200 miles of grassland stretching to their north and teeming with wallaby and what's still called forester kangaroo here in Tasmania, the eastern grey, and the emu.
Basically, Tasmania was kangaroo paradise. And when Bosun and his roo dog mates arrive in the early 1800s, this paradise is about to end. The dingo, the kangaroo's only predator on the mainland besides humans, had never made it to the island of Tasmania.
These animals are not adapted to the dog. The animals had never seen anything like it.
So kangaroos on mainland Australia had defended themselves against dingoes for thousands of years. But kangaroos in Tasmania didn't know what hit them.
There's no more supply ships coming in. Everyone sort of forgets about this settlement and it's basically left to fend for itself. And so they just switch to kangaroo ration. Suddenly they're eating fresh meat every day, supplemented by the shellfish, which were everywhere to be found. And they're eating a diet quite similar to the indigenous people of the island, and people's health becomes dramatically improved.
The Hobart government store buys huge amounts of kangaroo meat to feed the colony. Around 1 ton of kangaroo a week is what the town surveyor, George Harris, told his mother in a letter in 1805.
My pack of kangaroo dogs are as good as any in the whole country. There's lager, weasel, lion, bosun and brindle. And with those dogs, I scarcely ever have to send out for meat. My two huntsmen can bring me 3, 4, 5, even 8 kangaroo a day.
And it wasn't the military officers or government officials like Harris doing the dirty work of hunting with kangaroo dogs. It was the convicts assigned to them. A perfect side hustle for the gentry.
Reverend Robert Notwood was one of the officers, and he was one of the ones supplying the government store, making more money out of selling kangaroo to the government than his own wage. The whole economy is centred on the kangaroo.
Meanwhile, the intensive hunting of kangaroo with the newly introduced dogs is having an impact on the First Nations people.
And since 1803, when the British raised their flag at what was termed Risdon Cove, there'd been clear attempts to annihilate Aboriginal peoples.
And there was soon also resistance, pushback by local Palawa people, obviously.
Despite this resistance, the colonists and their kangaroo dogs go deeper into those beautiful Palawa-managed grasslands to hunt.
We soon see these convicts going bush, often without a gun, just with a dog.
The kangaroo dog Bosun was one of these dogs. Bosun lived with a convict kangaroo hunter in the bush.
Within 18 months of first settlement, we have British convicts living year-round in the Tasmanian bush. Now, this is one of the fastest adaptations to a colonised land. So they were dressing themselves in kangaroo skins, learning to make huts that they saw all around them. They were living semi-nomadic lives. Of course, what was in it for them was freedom. And the key was the dog.
These convicts were Australia's first bushrangers. But not the Ned Kelly kind, not yet. And it was kangaroo dogs like Bosun that made it possible for Tasmanian convicts to range the bush.
They were called bushrangers, but they weren't bushrangers in the sense we understand it, like armed outlaws. They were accepted by the state.
As time went on, bushrangers were no longer accepted by the state. Less like convicts gone wild, more like Ned Kelly. Armed outlaw and one of Australia's most famous bushrangers, Michael Howe, was captured in 1818. When he faced his death, it was said there were two things he'd miss.
One is the loss of his Aboriginal partner. The other is the loss of his kangaroo dog, Bosun.
Bosun missed his bushranger master too. But a good kangaroo dog was too valuable to let mope around. Bosun was traded for kangaroo skins with First Nations people. And this trade had been happening since the early days of the Tasmanian colony.
There wasn't a lot that Aboriginal people initially wanted from British society, but the dog was a different matter.
Pretty early on, they were incorporated, and not just kangaroo dogs, because a lot of colonists had small terriers.
A quick note here. Early on, as Julie Goff says, First Nations people took in kangaroo dogs and other kinds of dogs that the colonists owned. And these dogs bred. So the original strict deerhound-greyhound mix from Sydney Cove changed over time, in Tasmania and on the mainland. But they were still called kangaroo dogs.
The kangaroo dog, it provided companionship. It was an early warning system of colonists encroaching upon us. It provided warmth. It became a family member.
So the dog was traded, supplied, puppies were supplied. The dog spreads right across the island.
The advantages of the dog were quickly understood, and to have such a, you know, completely alien being be quickly incorporated into your life and family life, these glimpses of how much we did equip ourselves, our ancestors, to survive and change, such as incorporating the dog into everyday life, shows that we were flexible, adaptable, resilient people.
The kangaroo dog is central to this whole adaptation on both sides of the frontier, this whole encounter.
Tasmanian Aboriginal people adapted to the new dog, but the Tasmanian environment did not.
Sadly, the Tasmanian emu is extinct, and the forester kangaroo, the eastern grey, it's recovering now, but it also was threatened with extinction, again by the effectiveness of these dogs.
The Tasmanian emu, smaller and darker than the Australian mainland emu, became extinct in 60 years, with the most likely cause being overhunting.
In the early decades of the British invasion, the introduction of the dog is impossible to separate from the introduction of white people.
By the 1820s in Tasmania, and on the east coast of Australia by the 1830s, British settlers are now taking over Aboriginal land to farm food, cattle and sheep. Dog historian Guy Hull.
Kangaroo dogs went with people, they lived with people. In every little cabin or slab hut or the settlers made as they were spreading out throughout the countryside, they took kangaroo dogs with them because that was their ticket to survival, because what small stock they took had to be shepherded and protected.
Free settlers who were given large land grants, they're wanting to keep out everybody else. This is my land.
One of the issues people had with kangaroos and why the reason they kept kangaroo dogs is because kangaroos eat the same thing that sheep eat, and that's grass. So they were seen as being competitors. Australian pastoralism just took war to everything. To everything.
Australian pastoralism did take war to everything and everyone that stood in its way. Here's First Nations academic Carol Dowling, who you heard from earlier.
All I can speak is from the Swan Colony in Perth, and also up in our country, but in my country, in the central west around the Murchison. Colonists, when they first came in contact with our people, we often would allow them to actually have a chance to have kangaroo or to hunt kangaroo. The idea of someone going hungry was unheard of. But unfortunately, as time wore on, those engagements, they quickly went sour, mainly because of our values within the community, within First Nations community, was one of reciprocity. You know, what are you going to give back to us in kind? Emus and kangaroos were considered open game for the colonists that came into our country, but there was no consideration that First Nations peoples could actually spear a sheep, a steer, to actually recompense for the loss of game in country, claimed as reciprocal food source. And this was often met with quite a lot of retaliation by the colonists. So the idea of reciprocity was an issue in that early engagement. A lack of understanding on both parts, but particularly from the colonists, who viewed their conquering of country tantamount to taking whatever resources that was located on that country.
When Aboriginal people killed cattle or sheep, just as the colonists killed kangaroo, the British often retaliated violently.
It wasn't unheard of for whole groups of people being massacred or shot because of them taking sheep and livestock.
It's one part of the 140 years of conflict and resistance between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people in Australia, called the Frontier Wars. And in these wars, the kangaroo dog's role changed to battle dog.
So the British techniques I mean, it's really hard to talk about this stuff. They learn that the most effective way, and is refined in Tasmania and in New South Wales and then taken into other parts of the continent, is to surround Aboriginal campfires at night.
Our ancestors were attacked while sleeping at 3 a.m. It was this sort of set time when colonists thought everyone's asleep.
Position yourselves. And then as dawn breaks, you just open volleys of musket fire and it's just slaughter.
Raid an Aboriginal camp and kill everyone.
But the early warning system, so are the dogs. The dogs start to bark. You know, we hear often accounts of that and then, you know, someone's out there, something's out there. So they become really key to managing this threat. But also their capacity to catch food on the go when you're conducting a sort of guerrilla warfare and you're needing to move all the time.
The kangaroo dog was a partner in the hunt for bringing down the kangaroo and the wallaby. So it made life more economically possible when our numbers were so reduced. It had to almost replace our missing people.
Newspapers also report kangaroo dogs taking on a more active role in the conflict.
There's another story in the Hobart Town Gazette.
October 29, 1831.
Another attack by the natives.
Upwards of 150 natives armed with spears and waddies and attended with nearly 50 fine kangaroo dogs again surrounded the house of Mr. Hobbs.
And you wonder too about what level of protection or warning they provided colonists.
In Queensland, kangaroo dogs are kept by some police, including the notorious native police. The frontier wars end in the 1930s. A legacy of the land grab left roo dogs right across Australia, but mainly out bush, in country towns, remote communities, and outback stations. And people still used them to hunt.
We all had our own kangaroo dog. I had mine, and Charlie had his, and Earl had his, and we used to go out hunting hares.
In these archival interviews, Sir John Cramer, who you just heard, and First Nations man Bill Gray, both of rural New South Wales, kept kangaroo dogs.
What else did you eat out there?
Oh, kangaroo, emu,
porcupine. Just go out of town and shoot
them. Yeah, you don't have to go, you know, 5 miles out of town, get a feed of wild meat.
Yeah.
Mostly kangaroo.
Just run them down dogs or shoot them?
Yeah, no, dogs. Yeah. We used to have the dogs. And the kangaroo dogs would be trotting along in the shade of the buggy or the sulky. And me and Joni, we'd run along with the dogs.
But, you know, every decade that went by, they became less and less popular. So, you know, weapons became more accurate. And then rifles could shoot quite long distances and, you know, had the power to knock a kangaroo over. Well, they made the kangaroo dog redundant overnight.
I wonder about, you know, where are all the descendants of those dogs that kind of helped us survive? Are they with colonists now again? Are they back with where? Or any families, Aboriginal people, with the descendants of those dogs?
The answers to Julie Goff's questions are yes and yes. Kangaroo dogs are still with us today. They're in the bush blocks of Tasmania, in Western Australia, where they've probably got some dingo in them. They're all over, including Bairnsdale in regional Victoria, which is our last stop.
I've had this one line of dogs for 50 years, which makes me sound a little bit oldish, but I'm not. I'm just a young...
This is Lex Raymond, a pastor of his local church and the only kangaroo dog breeder in Australia, it seems.
Come and meet some dogs. So have you actually seen a kangaroo dog before?
Never.
Never? Wow.
I've only seen them in photos and historical paintings.
Yes. Yeah.
But I've never seen one in real life.
Well, they're a super friendly dog. Everyone says to you their dogs are wonderful. It's not true. And it's probably the temperament of these dogs that is the most endearing quality of them. This is Willow, hey? And she's just a real little sook and a softie, hey?
Beautiful.
Here, Elsa, come here. She's an absolute sweetie, very obedient. Here, Elsa, you can see in that dog, she's almost like a smile and the kind eyes, hey? She's a good girl.
I asked Lex if he could remember the names of the dogs that he's bred over the past 50 years.
What you're asking for, I could get my 9-year-old granddaughter to tell you, because she is an expert on all my dogs.
So the first dog he ever had was Scout.
Scout.
And he loved him lots.
She would tell you about Shiloh and Chick and all these dogs.
Shiloh, Chick.
And Rain. In fact, I've got dogs today that carry the names of those original dogs because of that emotional connection. I've got a pup here called Rain because I had a Rain 45 years ago. I have a Bonnie today because I had a Bonnie 50 years ago.
Oh, hello, mate. Elsa. Good girl. So this is Elsa. You can't see her, but she's very calm.
My granddaughter names my dogs based on her history she carries that I've imparted to her.
On Lex's farm, I got to meet real kangaroo dogs, Willow, Fagin and Elsa, the great-great-great-great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Bosun, the bushranger's dog. While the history of kangaroo dogs can make it sound like they're ferocious, bloodthirsty beasts, they're just not. And they're not ugly either. They're really beautiful dogs.
Well, for ages I was very scared of them because they're so big. But once you get used to them, they're very nice and calm.
I think anybody that invests a partnership with a dog, whether that's just living with a dog in your home, dogs play a remarkable role in human life. All dogs that we have are bred for a purpose. And the kangaroo dog's purpose has evolved as our world has changed. It's kept evolving.
The kangaroo dog is actually quite an honoured animal within our families, particularly in smaller country towns, especially in the southwest and up in the wheat belt. We do know that a lot of people will go out hunting with their dogs still. But generally, most of them are couch potatoes, these dogs. They're very pampered and very much loved by their families.
We've got a lot, I think, to thank for those creatures joining us. The kangaroo dog is, for me, emblematic of our people's survival against the odds and being able to use something as an ally that had come from so far away, and that when it was with us and our ancestors, I mean, survival was the task at hand, and it did work, and we are still here, and we partly have that dog to thank for that.
So, the kangaroo dog was born of colonisation and the Australian environment, born on country. From hunting dog to bushranger's best mate to battle dog and family member of black and white Australians. The kangaroo dog's seen a lot. And by seeing the past through a dog's eyes, maybe we can face our history together.
Kangaroo Dog was produced by Jane Curtis. The sound engineer was John Jacobs. This has been a Rewind production for ABC Radio National, where you'll catch me, Hilary Harper, most of the week. Look forward to your company.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.